Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys.
Hey, you're back at the Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Labarty Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick. Kate Crater is a senior editor at Food & Wine magazine. She's overseeing its news, trend, and restaurant coverage. She's led Food & Wine's annual search for the Food & Wine Best New Chefs. She's author and editor of the Food & Wine Cocktail section and has contributed to Food & Wine's cookbooks and its bookazines. Doesn't she sound like a person that we'd want to talk to? Hey, Kate, welcome to the show.
Good morning. How are you doing?
Hi, Kate. How are you today?
Great. How are you?
Doing very, very well.
Now, the Best New Chefs of 2006. Talk to us about this.
Well, you know, the Best New Chef is basically, we're not supposed to have favorites, but it really is our favorite story of the year. And we go out, what we do is the editors of Food & Wine go out across the country to find, like, the rising talents, the best new chefs in every city in America. And then we have to winnow down our choices and choose 10 of them. And this year we found 10 excellent men and women to be our best new chefs.
That's got to be really hard to do, to break it down to 10 new chefs.
Sometimes it is. It's really funny. Some years are harder than others. But, you know, every year it's funny how the cream rises to the top, and we really do find these great people. But you're right, it's tricky because there's a lot of really great people cooking across America right now.
What qualifies a chef as a new chef?
That is an excellent question, especially this year. They have to have been an executive chef in charge of their own kitchen for at least 1 year, but not more than 5 years. So some people will, like, recommend their brother-in-law who's been cooking for, like, 10 years at his own place, and we have to say, so sorry, that doesn't work.
Mm-hmm. So where do the suggestions come from?
We get them from everyone. We get them from people like you. We get them from local restaurant critics and food editors of magazines and newspapers across the country. Mm-hmm. We ask former Best New Chefs who they recommend, and they sometimes their suggestions are great, and sometimes they recommend, you know, like the guy, you know, they recommend people who are their best friends and stuff like that. So you have to be a little tricky. You have to look out for people who have the same last name, you know.
If only our legislature were as careful as you.
Exactly. Does that work? Yeah, exactly.
So what exactly are the traits you're looking for in a new chef besides being only 1 to 5 years as an executive chef?
We want them to demonstrate some creativity. Like, we'd like to see that they're doing their own kind of food, but they also have to be totally solid. You know, like, people can be as experimental, you know, crazy experimental, but if it doesn't work, then we love to see what people are doing, but they really have to make food that you want to eat, that you crave, and you want to go back for, you know?
So does that mean that somebody who makes, like, Ferran Adria kind of out there food may not be as likely to qualify as someone who makes maybe more rustic?
No, in fact, like, those kind of people get nominated all the time, and they're at the top of the list, but unfortunately not everyone can execute like he can, you know? Mm. Like, you know, sometimes that food is
Yes,
great.
We know.
I bet you know, yeah.
And when that stuff goes right, just so everybody in our audience knows, Ferran Adria is very much on the cutting edge. He's got a restaurant in Catalonia in Spain, and he's probably the preeminent restaurant chef pushing the envelope of cuisine in the world, and he has kind of crazy, wacky concoctions that really, I'm supposed to go there this year. But his disciples have had food of his disciples in New York and in Madrid, and they're really out there and they're really wild, and when they work, they're brilliant, and when they go off the rails,
when they go wrong, they're so, so, so wrong.
Exactly.
Oh my. Anyway, so now you get these suggestions, you have your criterion. Now, does your staff go out to all these restaurants and dine in these restaurants?
Yes, we do. We have, that's when our job gets really fun. We get to just go out across the country and go to these restaurants and you know, have a meal anonymously, because, you know, unlike Frank Bruni and stuff, people don't have dossiers on us right now.
We will, though, Kate. Beware.
No, don't say that.
Well, and hopefully your picture won't be on AOL.
Exactly.
Did you see that?
That was rough.
Did you see that?
I feel like I'm about to go Google him and see what I get.
Yeah, it was reported by the AP
on I mean, one of the front page articles on AOL.
Big as life.
I mean,
poor Frank Bruni.
You know what I remember?
So wrong.
You know what I remember? When Bill Grimes became the restaurant critic for the New York Times, I had a book of his which was amazing. It was called Straight Up Around the Rocks: A Cultural History of American Drinking. It was one of the best books on cocktails written in the latter part of the 20th century.
Really?
Oh, it was amazing.
Awesome.
And there was a book jacket cover, and I had mislaid the book. I didn't know. I couldn't turn it up. And then I went to buy the That book, couldn't find it anywhere.
Really?
It was totally pulled. And he rewrote the book without a book jacket cover.
Wow. Well, that's, I think, didn't that happen to Frank Bruni, too? Like, he wrote a political book, like, George Bush's first 100 days or something like that, and his... I wonder if they reissued that as well without his picture.
Well, do you think... Now you do go and professionally review restaurants, albeit in a slightly different way. I mean, do you think that if you get spotted that the restaurant can really make it a wholly different experience?
That is such a good question. I kind of feel like no matter what, once you walk into a restaurant, there's only so much they can do. Like, if they spot your alias on a reservation sheet, then they can totally pull out and make sure that their fish purveyor delivers the best fish and all that stuff. But I think once you've walked into the restaurant, all they can do is throw their best server at you and just, like, check the plate 5 times and make sure it's cooked right. But what else can they do?
Well, you know, the other thing.
I think the only thing that a restaurant can do at that point is prevent mistakes that they might not otherwise make. You can't do it. You can't be better than you really are.
That's such a good point. That's such a good way to say it. I think it was, I don't know if you ever remember, but Ruth Reichel wrote a really clever review of Le Cirque 100 years ago.
The best review of my life.
True, I agree with you.
It was called The Two Views of Ruth Reichel. Dinner is a most favored patron, and dinner is an unknown diner.
Exactly. And, like, the strawberries, like, as soon as they recognized her, it was, like, mid-dessert course, right? Like, the strawberries
they pulled
5 times bigger.
Right, they pulled a dessert that had been laid in front of her away. Do you know that in that article, because we had her on the show a couple of months ago, and in that article, I thought this was hyperbole, but the second, when she showed up for the third time and she had been recognized, Syria McConey, the maitre d' at Le Cirque, met her at the door and said, and she'd shown up a little early, and she'd been made to wait every time before in the bar interminably, so Syria meets her at the door, he's waiting for her, she's 15 minutes early, and she says, oh, I'm a little early, I'll wait at the bar, and he says, Madame, the King of Spain is waiting at the bar, but your table is ready.
That's unbelievable.
And I thought that was the most wonderful line of hyperbole I'd ever heard
in
my life.
Thought she was kidding.
Until we had her on the show. She said, no, my son recognized him. The King, Juan Carlos, was here. He was waiting at the bar, and my table was ready. And then he sat down next to us.
That is crazy.
So I guess you can do some stuff, but we never have any royalty come into our restaurant. So
rarely. We have occasional.
Well.
Oh my!
You
know, so
an occasional duke is all.
Now you travel the country other than just for this article, tasting food and wine across the country, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sometimes we get I get to go on some assignments and check out. I just got to do a fun road trip around California, finding the best food and wine experiences.
Well, I want to talk about that when we come back, and I also want, but I want to talk before that about the best new chefs of 2006 and what we can expect and what we saw in this year's crops of the best chefs in America. Our guest is Kate Crater. She's a senior editor at Food and Wine Magazine, and we'll be talking more with her in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:25.
Today we are proud to present Jackie Naylor.
Once upon a time, New Year's Eve was a night for swank jazz, champagne, and caviar. Ring in 2007 at just such a gathering with us. The Restaurant Guys present a New Year's Eve jazz concert at the Crossroads Theater starring Ms. Jackie Naylor. Jackie's been called the new voice of jazz by Vogue magazine. Jazz Times says, in the never-ending Next Big Thing sweepstakes, bet on Jackie Naylor. She's headlined internationally, she's played with Michael McDonald and David Sanborn, and on New Year's Eve, she'll play to a sold-out crowd at the Crossroads Theater right next to our restaurants. Dine before or after the show at either one of our acclaimed restaurants. There are hotel accommodations within walking distance, one of the best jazz singers in the country, two of the best restaurants in the state, an evening not to be forgotten. Go to stageleft.com or Catherine Lombardi.com for details, reservations, and menus, or call 732-828-4444. Put the swank back in New Year's Eve. Spend it with the Restaurant Guys. Hey, you're back with the Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis of Catherine Lombardi and Stage Left Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick, New Jersey. And our guest today is Kate Crater. She is a senior editor at Food and Wine Magazine, and she's intimately involved in the much anticipated Best New Chefs of 2006, which are the awards that everybody in the food business looks out for every year that have just been given. So what about this year's crop of chefs, Kate?
Well, this year we did something a little unusual. We've been doing this for... I'm supposed to know this stuff off the top of my head. I think this is like our 18th year, or maybe our 19th year. But
88's your first year.
88 is our first year. So let's do the math. So this is our 18th year of Best New Chefs. And this year we did something a little different, especially in New York. We picked a guy, this guy David Chang, who has this fantastic place, Mama Fuko Noodle House. Mm-hmm. It's everybody's favorite place. Like Mario Batali goes there, Tom Colicchio goes there, all these great chefs. It's where they like to hang out. But basically it's a noodle bar. It's very nice. It's very clean. Like no problems with the Board of Health. But it's not fancy, but we feel like he is one of the best chefs in New York right now, the best new chefs, I should say. Like, just making this amazing food that everybody wants to eat. Have you guys been there?
We haven't been to Mama Fuko, actually.
You have to go there.
Well, we've heard that, and all of our friends go there, so.
It's one of those places that the name keeps coming up, you know?
It's amazing. Like, the chef used to work at Le Cirque, or he worked at Cafe Balude, and so he has this fantastic respect for ingredients. He gets his pork from Iowa, he gets his bacon from Tennessee, I think, and he makes this fantastic ramen noodle soup. Like, he just gives a new definition to what you think ramen noodle soup should be.
Have you seen that from a lot of the chefs, a real focus on the ingredients?
Yeah, no doubt. There's definitely, chefs are definitely, you know, I mean, of course, a lot of them pay a lot of attention to ingredients, but you do expect it more from somebody like Daniel Balude or Tom Colicchio, those guys who can really pay to get someone to give them the perfect egg, you know, or the perfect fish. And and so someone like David Chang at Mama Fuko, for him to respect pork so much and really go out of his way to find these little pork growers is just amazing.
I think that I want to talk about this in particular more with you after the news, but it seems to me that people are paying much more attention, and sort of the mission of this show is local seasonal food. You know, that's
great.
What we talk about a lot, and sustainably produced food, which
awesome.
Is also local and seasonal. But it seems to me that I think that's sort of growing into new applications, like Mama Fuko Noodle House. Our restaurant, Catherine Lombardi, is an Italian-American restaurant, and yet we purchase from small farms, and the price has to be a little higher as a result of that. But we found that the consumer is really looking for, you know, even if it's chicken parmesan, organically raised, free-ranging chicken that doesn't have any hormones in it.
Yeah, I definitely see it moving out of the super premium restaurants and kind of filtering down into all the restaurants.
And it's probably because of our efforts on this show. No, maybe not exactly, solely. Our guest is Kate Crater. She's a senior editor of Food & Wine magazine. We'll be talking more with her after the news. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:30.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon. Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com or download our podcasts on iTunes.
Today, our guest is Kate Crater. She is a senior editor at Food & Wine magazine, and their Best New Chefs of 2006 is a very important award that's come out. Now, we've been talking since before the news, and one of the points that we touched on was that the best new chefs in 2006 aren't all cooking at the most expensive, highest end, what some would call in New Jersey parlance, frou-frou restaurants. I mean, there's more of an emphasis, there's more of an appearance with people who are concerned about local ingredients, seasonal ingredients, and using great technique on more rustic food. I mean, is that are we seeing more of that in dining in general and among the top chefs?
Well, you know, it's really interesting. I think there is a little, I don't know if it's a kind of trickle-down effect, but definitely in the big cities, you're seeing chefs just can't afford to be super creative all the time because of restaurant rents, I have to assume.
Mm-hmm.
And so we definitely are seeing fantastic creativity in smaller, in people with, in more modest spaces and more modest neighborhoods. I mean, it started a couple years ago with the Lower East Side specifically, but it's interesting to see all the different ways it's manifesting itself. But, you know, it really is hard to find chefs doing fantastic creative food that they really want to do in Midtown Manhattan. When they have these rents, they have to support, and they have to do deluxe burgers, and they have to do steaks, you know?
Well, now, I'm thinking of, in the lineup is Mary Dumont from the Dunaway Restaurant in Strawberry Bank, New Hampshire. And her, and I've never been there, but I, of course, have read Food and Wine religiously. And it says the restaurant specializes in creative, rustic American cuisine with an emphasis on local ingredients, especially New England seafood.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think that we're getting to the point where we're sourcing, and Mark and I have said a long time, we're restaurateurs as well, and we spend half of our time sourcing ingredients. I mean, it seems as though that's half of a chef's job these days, don't you think?
Yeah, no, definitely there's a question about whether the best chefs are better shoppers or better cooks, you know, and I think you kind of have to be both.
Well, I think you get about halfway there. You can get halfway home by using okay ingredients and applying tremendous technique.
Mm-hmm.
And you can get halfway home by buying great ingredients and not screwing them up, you know, and sort of keeping things simple.
Excellent point.
I mean, it seemed like in the 80s, certainly when Francis and I began our restaurant careers and even the early 90s, there was a lot of focus on technique.
Mm-hmm.
And it seemed like as the 90s came in, and of course, now that we're in a new century, it seems like there's been a kind of a turning back to those types of ingredients, those great ingredients.
Yeah, no, it is really nice. There's definitely like an honesty and a purity to food now. I think that we haven't seen for a while. Like comfort food was really in for a couple years, and still is. But I think definitely people can taste like what a really good chicken tastes like, you know, and once you taste that, you don't want to go back and just mess it up and do like crazy things to it.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that I say in one of our restaurants all the time, and Catherine Lombardi's named after my grandmother, one of the things I say about, you know, her food, because she was cooking in the 40s and the 50s and the 60s mostly, one of the things I say about her food is, you know, there was no such thing as a free-range chicken for grandma. Grandma's, you know, the chicken that was on grandma's table was the slowest one. Okay,
that's awesome.
Hey, well, I mean, but, excellent. You know, it's funny because we looked when we put together the menu for Catherine Lombardi and we started doing what we do in our contemporary American restaurant, which is, you know, naming the farm that the chicken comes from. And with all these traditional Italian American dishes, the menu looked cluttered and it was weird. It didn't work. And the idea was, no, Catherine Lombardi never would have gone into her butcher and said, can I have an organically raised free-ranging chicken that's seen no antibiotics? But, of course, every chicken she ever bought was organically raised and free-ranging and had never seen antibiotics. You know, that came in later. And so, in a way, it's a return to, I mean, if you look at macaroni and cheese, it's the same thing. I mean, macaroni and cheese was a staple American dish. Well, then it turned into, when I was a kid, macaroni and cheese meant orange noodles out of a box. And now it's come back to where you see a lot of macaroni and cheese on great menus. And as long as it's great, I'll take, you know, if I got to take the guy who gets halfway there with technique or the guy who gets halfway there with ingredients, I'll take the ingredients every time. Don't you find?
I guess I think that's the food. You know what? Ultimately, it tastes better. Like, it's exciting to have a tomato that has the texture of caviar and explodes in your mouth. But if it's not a good tomato, if it's not something that you crave, then you definitely are going to go back to the place that has the great ingredients and the food that tastes good.
I'm 100% with you. And you know what? You can only eat, like, carrot-flavored exploding caviar once in a while. You know, and I'm a foodie. I'm a food head.
Yeah.
So you wrote recently about a trip you did in Southern California where you started in L.A. and did a whirlwind food trip, which I think was as interesting for people to read as an insight into what you do for a living. We all were trying to be you in, while reading the article. We live vicariously through you in the article, as it was about the food scene that's going on there. First, let me ask you about L.A. L.A. has been always known as one of the largest cities in America with one of the worst food reputations ever, and that seems to have turned around in the last 10 years.
Absolutely. There's definitely some really great chefs out there who are cooking, and it's kind of ridiculous because they really have fantastic farmers markets there. Their ingredients can rival San Francisco's, which truly is like the best produce I've ever seen in my life, definitely in the United States.
Right.
And they have these fantastic, awesome farmers markets, and so it was crazy that these chefs weren't really doing anything with them or that they weren't getting enough credit, you know, or, you know, people, you know, the scene in L.A. is definitely not, to, you know, you don't go places for the organic chicken that Catherine Lombardi, the slow-ranging chicken.
Right,
that
Catherine I have to say, you know, the best description of in the early 90s, a friend of mine described L.A. He said, yeah, an L.A. restaurant is where models go to not eat.
Exactly.
And now that's different? That's changed.
Tell us how it's changed.
I think, well, you know, I'm not really sure if, I'm not sure if models are eating any more than they used to, but there's definitely, I mean, I think just food has gotten so important in American culture now that it's cool. I mean, you still want to go to places in L.A. where there's a scene, but I think it's also just really cool to go to places where the food's good. You know, like Tom Ford hangs out at Luke, this restaurant Luke, which I think is one of the best restaurants in L.A. And, you know, even if he just goes there for lunch and he goes to some seedy place for dinner, it's better. You know, I think it just makes these people look better and smarter and more sophisticated if they're not hanging at this schlocky place with a gross sushi, you know.
Well, let me ask you, let's turn it back to the East Coast. And you know, we live around here as well. We're about 40 minutes outside of Manhattan. And, and we go to Philadelphia and travel the world, but we're focused in New York City as well. And all my friends who can't afford to live in Manhattan anymore also live in Brooklyn, which is where you live.
Right, exactly.
Now, the Brooklyn food scene is very interesting because Brooklyn and New Jersey have always played like the weak sister to the real food in Manhattan. But I think that both in New Jersey and certainly in Brooklyn, there's a real sort of a nascent food scene. Why don't you tell us, can you tell us about Brooklyn and what's going on in your neighborhood?
Yeah, I can tell you though, I have to say I'm probably going to get kicked out of my neighborhood now. I think the Brooklyn food scene's been really overrated for the past year or two. Like, I think that it was getting so hyped up and there's definitely some great restaurants in Brooklyn, but they're not, you know, when people talked about the Smith Street Revolution and stuff, it was way overrated. Whereas I think in places like New Jersey, I think a lot of chefs are just figuring out that they can't afford the rents. And I mean, and this is true of Brooklyn to a certain extent, but I think it's even truer of suburban counties like in Westchester and in New Jersey. Chefs are figuring out that it's not worth paying $30,000 a month in rent, and they're opening places in their own neighborhoods where they've come from or where they've moved with their families, and they're cooking remarkable food. So I think it's part of actually like Mary Dumont being in New Hampshire, that there's definitely an audience for great food that's not just in the big cities anymore. And that's what's, that's something that we're at Food & Wine are really excited about.
Well, and I think that it's interesting when you move out of the cities, you know, it, it doesn't go so much by neighborhood, but people will drive now. And part of it has to be, you know, all of you listening to this show have contributed to this, because when we first opened in 92, there was stuff we would do that people weren't open to, or there weren't enough people open to. And slowly, I mean, the demand is there, and the educated consumer is there, and the passionate foodie is out there to patronize these restaurants and drive a couple of towns over to get there.
I see it changing. So even more quickly now, it's kind of accelerating and gaining speed.
Hey, we're going to talk more with Kate Crater, the senior a senior editor at Food & Wine magazine, about how to find great restaurants maybe off the beaten path, which she's actually written about. And we'll be talking about that in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 1145.
Let me talk to you about lighting, and specifically about how you can enhance the appeal of any space. Lighting is a powerful, emotional, and aesthetic force. It's one of the most important elements of design. More than anything else, it sets the mood and tone for an entire experience. A room pops or it doesn't based on lighting. Lights on 9 is a top-notch commercial and retail lighting supplier. Lights on 9 supplied all the lights for our award-winning Catherine Lombardi restaurant, inside and out, dining room and kitchen. Lights on 9 has everything from tasteful and stylish chandeliers to table and floor lamps to outdoor lighting for illuminating a building or walkway or a sign. At Lights on 9, the service is exemplary, expert, and knowledgeable. They ship anywhere in the continental United States for free. Their retail store is in the Galleria Shopping Center on Route 9 in Manalapan. They're open 7 days a week. Call them at 732-308-9166. That's 732-308-9166. Or visit them at lightson9.com. That's lightson9.com.
Central Jersey Talk Radio. Central Jersey 1450. WCTC with the Restaurant Guys.
Hey, you're back with the Restaurant Guys. Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick, New Jersey. Our guest today is Kate Crater. She is a senior editor at Food & Wine magazine. And we were talking about finding the best restaurants in America and what you can do as a patron to find the best restaurants in America. And Kate, we're talking about how sort of the epicenter may still be in the big cities, but we're getting more and more restaurants sort of percolating out into the suburbs. You've written, and I thought this was very interesting, that there's you can outsmart high dollar dining towns by avoiding the city center in favor of flourishing ethnic epicenters. Don't just look to the fancy restaurants in high traffic areas. How do you recommend people find those out of the way places?
That's such a good question. I think one of the best things you can do is just research religiously and go online as much as you can. And I mean, you can't believe every single review you find on AOL, but I think at some point you kind of if you go through enough of them, you start to figure out what's going on. But you also, it helps, I think, if you have somebody that you really trust, you know, you ask them and say, like, have you been to Chicago? Like, where do you recommend
right.
in Chicago? Those are some of the things I do. I also feel like Time Out magazine generally mm-hmm. do, if you're in a city with a Time Out magazine, I generally always trust their recommendations.
Mm-hmm.
And they have, like, I think, like, in Chicago, the recommendations have been right on. I think they do a really, really good job. How do you guys find them? What do you guys do?
You know,
well, I'll tell you, one of the first resources we turn to is Agatz, is people from that region reviewing that region's restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
We find can add a lot.
Nah, that's not really true. No, that is true. We do refer to that, and we recommend that people look at Agatz.
But it can't be the be-all, end-all, because
Agatz, if somebody's doing something crazy, super excellent that a lot of people don't get, it's not going to be in Agatz. Agatz is 2 years behind sometimes. Mm-hmm. But we do look at it. We're in a city when we don't know. But honestly, you know what I think is a great way to if you go to a restaurant in your town or your city where you like the food there and you mm-hmm. know the people there, ask that restaurateur if he knows.
I think that's the best thing to do.
Mm-hmm. Because people in the business
tapping
know.
Tapping into people in the industry and tapping into people at places that you already respect, I find really can just filter its way through to everybody.
So
I totally agree with that. I think, if you trust somebody and you know they've been somewhere, like if you're friends with a chef, like you guys, you know, like you guys are traveling and people obviously love your food and you guys know exactly what you're talking about. So if you've recently been to Texas or you've recently been to Denver.
You know what's funny?
Yeah.
I get emails all the time, and sometimes I feel like I'm a travel agent because people say. And so what Mark and I have done is, like, for Paris, for example, because we wind up in Paris a lot whenever we're in Europe because we like it.
Well, I have an aunt who lives just outside of it.
But your aunt doesn't like me. So Mark usually goes
so
and sits with his aunt.
By yourself
and I need
night.
To find a restaurant. I simply have to save time
mm-hmm.
on several cities, Chicago, Paris. I have a little dossier. I have a one-page Word document.
Oh,
when
great.
Someone says,
it's
we're
Paris,
going to Paris, what do you recommend?
Paris hotspots, and we just attach it and send it.
Stop bothering me. Here you go. Go there. Have a great time. Here are the numbers. Make a reservation.
Here's our favorite chocolate shop. Here's a favorite clothier. Here's our favorite restaurant.
So I got to ask you, you have a dream job, right?
Sometimes. Some days.
Well, I mean, as far as like
yes.
the finding the hot new places, do you ever get tired of it? Do you ever just go out recreationally and find new restaurants on your own for non-professional purposes?
I definitely do. Me and my friends, it's funny, like, we used to all go to bars, and now we definitely, you know, if we're going to go out socially, like, we always go to restaurants. But you do find yourself getting super critical of, you know, somebody's kid make chocolate chip cookies, and you're like, this could actually use a little more chocolate. And you turn into a freak. So you just have to kind of watch it. But it's funny because it's really hard. It is the kind of job that can take over your whole life in a good way, you know. But
I wanted to ask you a question that is a little off topic, but mm-hmm. We were talking about your top new chefs of the year.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that I was looking at as I was going through the years and years of top chefs who've won this award, and some really, really prominent chefs have won this award over the years, one of the things, being a chef, it's a really transient business.
Mm-hmm.
Chefs will move sometimes every 6 months, just mm-hmm. go from job to job to job to job to
uh-huh.
job. One of the things I noticed about the chefs that have won this award since '88 is that once they win this award, they seem to be staying in the same place.
You know what? We wish that was true, but in fact, I think chefs are even more transient than they used to be, and sometimes I think something like this award gives them more motivation or they get more attention. But in the last couple of years, I think it's happened that every single year we pick a chef, and within 3 or 4 months, at least one of them moves, like at least one of them jumps ship. And this year, in fact, we have a short list of chefs going into when we pick our top 10. You know, we might have like 15 or 18
mm-hmm.
on our top 10 list. And three of them were moving.
Yeah, but when chefs, I mean, your average chef is leaving a job between 6 months and 18 months.
Mm-hmm.
You would expect that to happen just naturally. I look back at some of your chefs from 88, 90, 91, 92. They're still in those same restaurants. They may be doing other things as well.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of those people from 10, 12 years ago.
What happens when you have a chef on the short list and then he changes venues? Does he then fall off the list?
Yes. I mean, you know what? pretty much, it depends where they're going and what kind of setup they're going to.
Mm-hmm.
But if someone's going to a place that we don't know about, or they're going to open up, like, if they use a phrase like opening up a new restaurant, that's like, for us, like, we know that means, like, that restaurant, you never know when it's going to open, what kind of stuff they're going to do,
mm-hmm.
how their food might change, so we have to, it means we have to hold off on them for another year.
And you also know that someone, anytime you hear a restaurant's opening, is that someone's lost his mind.
Exactly.
Kate, I want to thank you for coming to talk with us on the Restaurant Guys.
Talk to you guys. We have to come and check you out.
Yeah, come check us out. And actually, I would love to have you back on the show. You've written some really cool stuff about cocktails. Will you come back and talk to us about
We never got to
talk about cocktails. Absolutely.
Excellent. Okay, well, thanks so much, and we'll have you back again.
Thanks so much. Great to talk to you.
Thanks,
likewise.
Kate. Have a good day.
That's Kate Crater. She's a senior editor at Food & Wine magazine. They've just come out with their Best New Chefs of 2006. It's actually a great magazine. We're going to link you to it on our site. You can go check out restaurantguysradio.com and link to Food & Wine magazine. It's one of the magazines that Mark and I read every issue that comes out.
Very
important
month.
Stuff out there. Hey, we'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to the Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:55. Hey, you're back with the Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis. We had a lovely guest earlier, Kate Crater, senior editor of Food & Wine magazine. I love that magazine. And their Best Chefs Every Year article is very important. You know, chefs like Thomas Keller, when nobody knew who he was, and now he's probably the best chef in America.
Tom Colicchio, Tom Valenti.
Gary Danko.
You just go right down the list, and all of these names are there.
Can we end on an amusing article?
Yeah.
All right. This is from the Associated Press. Florida woman finds bullet in pork casserole.
Is that bad?
You need your minerals, but you don't need
you don't need a bullet.
You don't need lead. Was the pig a victim of a drive-by shooting? Is one theory explained how a bullet wound up in Diane Johnson's pork loin casserole?
Yeah, how does that happen? I don't understand how that happens when the pig never gets outside. Okay, because for most of the pigs that we're eating in this country,
yeah, they're farm raised.
The pigs live indoors forever.
Well, even if they're
a tiny little cage,
even if they're outside. They're not wild pigs. We don't go pig hunting, okay? Okay.
What state was it in?
Florida.
Oh, in Florida. So what you're saying is somebody missed a mailbox and hit a pig.
Somebody was bored and out pig shooting. All meat scanned with a metal detector before reaching the Publix department store shelves, the grocery store shelves, said the spokeswoman for the company. It's not clear how the scanners missed the bullet or how the bullet got in the pork loin in the first place. Those scanners have now been sold to the Department of Homeland Security. Very interesting. I made that up.
It was funny, though. Once in a while, you're funny when you make stuff up.
Stephen said someone may have fired into a herd of grazing livestock. According to a Wisconsin Pork Association, professional slaughterhouses don't shoot animals. Good. Good thing you checked with the Wisconsin Pork Association to be sure of that.
The reasons
they don't shoot animals are given here are their employee safety and meat quality. Johnson was given a $10 refund and another fresh pork loin from Publix. She didn't plan to sue because no one got hurt.
What about the pig? He got shot. Come on.
The pig got hurt. Yeah. So it seems as though someone was out there and they were shooting mailboxes and they wound up shooting a pig. And, well, the pig didn't die. Well, eventually it died, of course.
Because you ate it.
That pig could have been carrying that bullet around for years. That knucklehead had a plate in his head. Is that the same thing? All right.
Oh,
anyway.
Man.
Pig couldn't fly in a plane. Can't go to... Anyway.
Man, I feel like I got a fork in my eye. Does that count?
Yeah, that's enough of that. All right, so be very careful about that stuff. That's very unusual. It's funny when she said she...
very careful. You don't have to be careful, okay? Most of us will never have a bullet in our pork.
When she picked it out, Ms. Stevens, 74, was quoted as saying, "There was no mistaking the projectile's distinct shape. It was a bullet." Thank you. And that's the top news from the Restaurant Guys.
That's it. That's what we got, huh?
Yeah, that's all we got. Go to our website and check out Food & Wine Magazine's link. You can link to them and go subscribe. It's really a great publication and fairly serious.
They also have some really cool awards on there every year called Tastemaker Awards,
yep.
Which come out every year, and those are quite interesting as well, and whether it's ice cream or coffee brewers, those kinds of things. Some really interesting people.
And we'll have Kate Crater back shortly to talk about cocktails and mocktails, as it were. Hope you've enjoyed the hour listening to the Restaurant Guys. I am Francis Schott.
And I'm Mark Pascal.
We are the Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 12 noon.